Should we do it?
Let's go. Let's do it. Yes, let me double quadruple check. Yeah, this is definitely recording.
Yeah, we're recording. Okay, I'm definitely recording. Okay, let's do it. Hello and welcome back to In The Frame. We have not one, but two episodes coming your way this week. Today's is a very special one because we're joined by the insanely talented Nikki Bentley. Nikki started out her career as a swing in Mamma Mia. She went on to understudy the Lady of the Lake in the West End production of Spamalot before touring the UK in Shrek as Gingy, whilst also understudying Princess Fiona. After touring Asia as understudy Molly in Ghost, Nikki joined the UK touring production of Wicked as standby Elphaba. She completed the tour and then took over from Alice Fern as Elphaba in the West End production. I had the most incredible time chatting with Nikki. I have such a soft spot for Wicked in my heart, and I feel like this is the ultimate podcast for any fan of the show as Nikki chats through her insane Elphaba journey. She literally blew my mind. Sadly, Nikki had to cut her London run as Elphaba short, and last summer she wrote an incredibly powerful post on Instagram about her experience with anxiety and with mental health. Later on in the episode, Nikki explains what happened and why she is now itching to get back on that broom. I think Nikki is a total inspiration. We could have chatted for days and days and days. Her passion for what she does is off the scale. And if you aren't aware of just how talented she is, you need to go and have a nosy through her Instagram and prepare to be blown away. Here's the interview. Nikki Bentley. You're in the frame.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
At last, I've got you.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. Honestly, this is so exciting and I'm super happy to be here. So awesome.
How are you? How are you doing? What's going on? Where's your mind at right now today? What's happening?
Do you know what? Actually, today is a good day because the sun is shining. That sounds so cliche, but it's true, isn't it?
It's totally blue. It is totally blue. Today.
Yeah. And they're like my favourite kind of winter days when it's, I don't mind it being cold, but as long as it's sunny. But when it's like the last few days, it's been literally grey, dark, rain, disgusting. So when you're already feeling like, oh my God, what is the point? Even worse when the weather outside is gross. So the sun is an absolute welcome today. So thrilled.
I know, it's going to get us through this January.
It is. Absolutely, 100%.
I am so excited to talk to you because you, when you look at like your CV and the roles that you've done and the roles that you've covered, there was just so many, for so many people that would be literally their like dream list, you know, doing Elphaba, but doing like Molly and even like Sugar Plum Fairy, like Gingy is like a big tick, let alone Fiona and Lady of the Lake. There's so many of those really iconic roles that you've got to tick off. So when you were like, growing up, were you someone who was always like, oh my God, get me on that stage? Were you geeking out about theatre or did you know nothing about it? Who was childhood Nikki?
Yeah, so like I always went to dance class and I always went to a Sunday stage school and I grew up on the Isle of Wight. So I was really lucky. So I was a very outdoorsy country, like I'm a massive tomboy still, but like even more so when I was younger. Yeah. And so I was into a lot of sports as well. Like I did sport at school and everything. But I always loved dance. I always loved, and like we did shows with the Stagecoach just Amdram really, but people would pay to come and watch the shows. So I did that, but I didn't actually. And then growing up, I mean, GCSE, for example, I did PE. I didn't even do drama. I didn't do anything. Yeah. I was well into my sports. And
sports?
So I am really good at long distance running. I mean, I'm okay now. I can bash out a 5K, like, but yeah, I'm not like running 10 miles a day or anything. But yeah, and I used to do all the long distance running. And I was okay at sprinting, but not like, you know, I was no Usain Bolt or anything.
The Olympics, the Olympics weren't quite cool.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? I missed opportunity. But no, yeah, so I didn't. And then when I went, when I turned 16, I was like, oh, I'm not ready to go to... and I knew sort of then, I was like, I remember going to... And I remember the exact show that was the turning point for me. It was when Starlight Express was last on tour, but we're talking like years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember going, and I'd always loved that show, because it was one of the shows, like growing up, that music was always that like traditional Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I remember going to see it, and that was my moment. And it was actually quite funny because Lucy Jane Adcock was playing Dinah at the time. And I later did like Mamma Mia and stuff with Lucy. And it's really funny. We talk about it now. And I'm like, I remember literally sitting in that audience being like, I want to be you one day. Like, and it's so funny. And that was the turning point for me. That was when I went, that is what I want to do. That is what I want to do. And my parents and me would always look in the programs to see, you know, where did people train? You know, what's the college that sort of comes up the most? And that's kind of how we sort of went about looking for what colleges to go to. But at 16, I knew it was too soon. I wasn't ready. I was like, no, I'm too scared to go then. So I was like, what do I do now? So I did a BTEC in performing arts at school. And I went to a big sort of like American campus school. So they had like a theatre. So the facilities were amazing. But I mean, it wasn't great, but it was, if anything, it was kind of just like a stopgap, like, you know, to fill that gap because I wasn't like, I don't want to go yet. So when I got to 18, I was like, right, I'm going to audition. Terrifying process. And then went off to Performers College. Just when I went there, I was like, I just felt, it just felt right. It just, because it's such a daunting thing, because I've never been, as much as I've always loved performing and I've always done it, I was never a stagey kid. Like I was never, like, ironically, my parents would always be like, go and sing, go and, you know, they would be like, oh, my child can sing, my child can do, you know, and I'd always be like, no, I don't want to. I was really shy and I wouldn't want to do it. Like if I was in the show, I'd be fine. But say if I, you know, when you're in a pub or somewhere and they're like, oh, they've got karaoke, they'll be like, go and sing. And I'd be like, no. Yeah. So I wasn't one of these kids that would just literally jump at any opportunity to get up there and, you know, do something. But, and so even when I was auditioning for college, I was a bit like, oh God, this is so nerve wracking and it's so daunting.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, such a scary process. But I just felt when I went to performance that I was like, I just felt comfortable there. And it felt like the right place for me. And And then that's when my 3 years started performing at Performers College.
Side note, I love Lucy Jane Adcock. Every show that I've seen her in, she always stands out so much, doesn't she?
She does.
I'm always like, who is that? I'm sure she's inspired many people.
I have seen, and she is someone that has literally done everything.
I know.
Like she's just got so much energy, and I just, her, it's just so infectious. And I'll just never forget when I saw her as Dinah in Starlight, and she just was phenomenal. And it was just so lovely to obviously to have our paths cross later on in life and be like, oh my God, like I used to aspire to be you. And you know, and it's just, you know, she was like, don't make me feel old, but you know, but it was, yeah, so that was my journey. And then 3 years at Performers, which was,
I want to know what when you were doing Stagecoach and when you were doing like Amdram and school plays, I want to know what was on your CV back then. What roles were you, was childhood Nikki Bentley playing?
I'm gonna do like a clang here. So I actually went to Stagecoach with Laura Michelle Kelly.
Oh my god, is she from the Isle of Wight as well?
Yeah, she is. Yeah, girl. Yeah, she is. And she's so lovely. I mean, she was obviously in like the top year when I was in like the bottom year. But my sort of like claim to fame with her is we did a production of Annie. And I played Molly, and I think she played Pepper. And we also had Amy Bird was in it as well. I don't know if you know Amy Bird.
Everyone was in the Isle of Wight living their best life at Stagecoach.
Yeah, literally. And so that was like the first kind of proper show I did. Absolutely loved it. And it was really funny because they always used to say, that, like, how can such a big voice come out of such a little person? And because it wasn't like, I've never really had like a sweet, innocent voice. I've got quite a manly, low, sort of resonant voice. And so when I was a kid, I just had this, and obviously you have no idea of technique, you have no idea of any of that. So it was just noise coming out, just literally like shouting, didn't know what I was doing with it. They used to be like, what the hell? Like, you know, and I remember actually later on in life when Laura was doing Lord of the Rings at Drury Lane, I'd obviously not been in contact with her, and she'd then become this enormous like Broadway star.
Yeah.
And I remember, and it was in my second year of college, I want to say, and I was like, okay, I'm really nervous, but I'm going to chance it. I'm going to go to stage door and just leave her a note or something. And literally, as I was saying to the stage door person, like, oh, can I just leave a note for Laura? She literally popped her head round and was like, oh, I'm here. And I was like, oh, God. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I don't know if you remember me, but like, I'm Nikki Bentley. I went to stage. And she was like, oh, my God. I mean, how the hell she recognized me? Like, she was like, oh, my God, as soon as you smiled, that was it. And we literally had like a 5-minute conversation of just, yeah. And it was really surreal and amazing. And my mum and dad saw her when she was in Mamma Mia as well. She's always someone that I've gone, oh, my God, someone from such a small place can become, you know, and she was always a massive, you know, sort of driving force for me and inspiration to kind of go, it can be done, you know, and obviously look at her now. She is absolutely incredible. Oh, yeah. So yeah, that was my little claim to fame there.
I want to ask about your voice. So I know you've said, and I'm aware we're probably going to start jumping around all over the place, but
no, it's fine.
That's the whole fun of it.
Yeah.
I know you kind of said that you never thought, you know, like something like Alpha would be achievable, or you never thought that would be you, but you were out here doing these, you know, big like roles, and you said you had always had like a big kind of a big voice. So where did, what is like your vocal journey? How did you discover it? And what were there people who were like holding you back and telling you things that about what you would and could achieve versus what you wanted to?
Do you know what? Yeah. So I've always been like, it's kind of like, I'm always my own worst enemy. I'm someone that, you know, growing up, I was like, I didn't really have a lot of confidence in it because, you know, and it always used to work. And even actually through college, there were some times where I would, because I would always obviously go for the school play, or I would go for, you know, and I would get the part, but I would actually sometimes get bullied for that because people are, oh, for God's sake, you know. And it even happened in college as well, you know, people would like, oh, what's the point in auditioning because Nikki's gonna get it, and instead of being like, oh, well, you know, that's what we're here for, you know, I would, it would really affect me, and it would actually sort of make me not dull down my talent, but I would never be the person in the room to go, oh, I'll sing that, I'll do that line, I would never put myself out there at all. So that was something that actually, and even still now, like, it's something that, you know, it does still affect me to a point where you kind of go, you don't, you believe in yourself, but you don't truly kind of fully trust in your talent to kind of really push yourself to go, nah, I can do that. Even though you're in your head, you're going, I know. It's like, so basically with like, you know, roles like Elphaba and stuff, it, you know, it's, I mean, Elphaba's, I always find it's on such a different level. You can't even compare it to anything. And I just think that even though I knew, and I discovered Wicked, obviously, when I first, I think it just came over when I first went to college in 2006. Mm. And I just will never forget the first time I heard it, I was like, that's it. That's it. Like, I need to see this show. That is everything I want to do. You know, because prior to that, I would always pick like the big belty songs, like On My Own, I Dreamed a Dream, you know, Somebody to Love and all of this. It would always be the big, big belty songs that I'd always go for. And funnily enough, I never actually had like private singing lessons when I was younger. I had them obviously at Stagecoach, but they're very much just like a choral, you know,
Everyone's very standard.
Absolutely. And so I never had proper singing lessons really until I went to college, and even still then, performance is very much like a dance based college, which is great because obviously being in musical theatre, you have to be able to do all three. But it's, I've kind of learned along the way. And when I've been in contracts, I've been, you know, lucky enough to be sent to people that I probably would never be able to either afford or be able to get a hold of. And that's, I've kind of learned along the way, which is why I'm like, oh, I'm even when I, you know, especially with my Wicked journey, my voice developed so much, even just in the last 3 years. Like it's, so it's something, I think for me, especially, it's definitely an onward, like it's a continuing journey of discovering your instrument.
Yeah, and it's changing and maturing and changing.
Oh my gosh.
And things get easier and things get harder. And
oh my God, absolutely. And I think like, you know, and depending on what job you're doing, like for example, Shrek, the different, and I always think like I was so lucky in that show because I basically got to do like both the best parts in the show. I got to be Gingy and I got to play Fiona as well, but they're two vocally very different, you know, the placement that you had to find to do Gingy. And I would always find, say if I was on for like a few days doing Fiona, your voice would settle into that a little bit, sort of, because like I said, my natural voice is quite low, so I would have to sort of, you know, put on a little bit of voice technique to make it a little bit more princessy, so I didn't sound like a, you know, butch princess. But
I'd be here for it. I'd have been here for that. But sure.
I mean, she could totally, you could totally pull it off with a character like Fiona. But and I would find that when I would then go back to doing Gingy, oh my goodness, that show would always be the funniest show because my larynx would just be in such a complete different, like completely different place that I literally would be like, like all over the place because it just was like trying to, so it would take like a couple of shows to get it back in the Gingy voice again. And it was just, it was so funny, but it just, it was so amazing as well, just to find those discoveries. And because obviously I didn't even know that I could do that voice until I literally went into the audition room and was like, okay, I know what I want it to sound like.
Yeah.
But, and I've done it a little bit at home, but you know, so I'm just going to go. And it was so funny. And I remember Nigel Harmon saying at the end of the audition, he was like, oh my God, like that is literally what I want Gingy to sound like, this. And so obviously I was like, thank God, you know, because it that kind of thing as well, such trial and error. It can be, you know, because it's depending on especially where it sits in your voice. Some people can, it's what's hard is when you try to, especially when it's one thing speak, it's much easier to speak in the voice than it is to sing. So especially like the beginning of Freak Flag, when you have your little solo, and just trying to find like where you can put the bit of Gingy in and where you have to bring it back so you can actually get the notes out. And, you know, you're singing like you're belting like a top E, I think the highest note she sings in that little bit. And so that was a really interesting journey to sort of go on with that. And again, like I said, with Wicked, it just, it's like I always look back now and I look at my, I listen to my video recordings of the tour, A Standby, and compared to In Town, they are worlds apart in some cases. It's just, I think when I was Standby, because every time you go out, it's like you don't know when you're going to get to do it again. So you literally just go all guns blazing, you know, and if anything, you kind of oversing it. You know, because every time you go on, you're just like, oh my God, I'm so excited to do this. But when I play, you know, when I took over the role and went back to rehearsals, you know, I remember talking with James Drazy and Adam Rowe, the MD, and just sort of one saying, we need to tone this down because one, it's vocally healthier, and also you need to sustain it for 8 shows a week. So, and that again, so that was so exciting to sort of see where I could bring it back, and where, and it was really amazing when they sort of said to me, look, it looks daunting, but it's there's only sort of like 22 bars that you really have to think about. And if you really break it, you know, because also as well, people don't want to be screamed at for 2 hours, like, you know, and so, and it's only really sort of like the final part of The Wizard and I, the last part of Defying Gravity. It's only really sort of No Good Deed that is kind of like all guns blazing from the get go.
Yeah.
And so it was just learning. And I was so lucky to be sent to Mary King, the incredible singing coach, who just, I mean, the stuff that even simple things like you drop your tongue back when you're singing. So push it when you're singing, push it forward and touch the bottom, your two bottom front teeth. Uh-huh. And honestly, it just opens the sound out. So, because obviously you're opening up your airway so much, and it just, so you're not even doing anything like massively technical, but the difference it makes was just incredible. And so, And again, as well, because obviously, you know, your voice box, it's a muscle. And so the more you work it, the more it gets used to doing something. And obviously then when I was doing it every day, I was finding this really lovely placement where I was able to keep my larynx a bit lower for stuff that would norm. And so it was much more healthier. And so when I listen to stuff now, I'm like, it's in like a really nice, deep resonant area of my voice that just sounds so different to what it was before. That's and so like I said, it changes all the time, and like I said, I think it's still developing now. So I think it depends on, you have to adapt depending on what job you're doing. And so it's, yeah, but especially Wicked, that's when I saw the big sort of change.
I remember I definitely saw you in Trek, probably Milton Keynes Theatre, somewhere glamorous. And I just remember being like, oh my gosh, who is this person belting in my face? Like extreme power belt. I was like, who? Like, this is incredible. And then obviously you went off and you were covering Molly. And then when it was announced that you were the standby for Elfa, I think you tweeted or you said something on the lines of, you know, I never thought this would be possible, or, you know, lots of people would never ever thought this would be the case or something. But I was like, why not? I'd have cast as Elfa after seeing you belt out Freak Flag in Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. It's interesting to hear from your perspective and to hear that kind of journey that you kind of went on.
Yeah, it's just, I think, like going back to what I said earlier, I think Elphaba is one of those roles where, I mean, it's got to be one of the biggest female roles,
of course,
ever in musical theatre. And as much as you sort of know you can sing the notes, you know you can, you know, you think, oh, I sound, I've got a contemporary musical theatre sound. It's that twangy sort of, you know. But you just don't ever think that it's a possibility. It's just not something... I did anyway. It's something I knew. Like from the moment I first watched it, and I've said, I literally say the same thing every time. The minute I watched it, it wasn't a case of, oh, I love that role. That's something I would love to do. It was like, no, that is something I need to do. Like I just, and it sounds so cliche, but it did. Like I just related to Elphaba so much, and there was just something about it that went, nah, that hit me right in the heart. And I was like, no, that I need to play that. I will not be happy in my life unless I've done that at least once. And that was always from that minute, that was the goal. And yes, there were moments like throughout my career, because I started my career very much as a dancer. And I remember having a conversation with someone, and this was the first moment where, and it was, again, it was one of those roles where you don't, it's like you're too shy to say it. When someone goes, oh, what's your dream? What would you love to do? And like, it's like you're too scared to go, oh, I'd love to play Elphaba one day. Because the people go, yeah, all right, mate, in your dreams.
Yeah, everyone says that.
Yeah. And I will never forget, there was this one person that we were sort of, it was when I was in Mamma Mia, and we were talking about it. And that we were having a discussion of what would you like to do? And I was like, oh, you know, I'd love to play Elphaba one day. And this person literally laughed in my face and went, yeah, in your dreams. And it really sort of like took me aback. And I was like, you know, and it really affected me, like to the point, you know, where from then on, I was scared to sort of say to people, you know, oh, that's what I want to do one day. you know, because people had never really heard me sing, they were like, well, obviously you can hold a tune because you're a swing in Mamma Mia, like, you know. And then when I got Shrek, that was, you know, a step, you know, because I'd done, obviously I did spam a lot, and that, you know, again, it was, I think when I look back at spam a lot, I always think like, oh my God, yeah, that did actually happen. And it's crazy because I think it's one of the funniest shows. I'd never heard of it. Yeah, I'd never heard of it before. And I'll never forget when I got the audition through, I was like, oh my God, I need to go see this show because I know nothing about it. I obviously know about, you know, King Arthur and the Holy Grail and all of this stuff. But I went, I remember going with my brother and watching it, and I was like, I have never laughed. And I know, because it's so slapstick, you either get it or you don't. I totally got it. And I was so there for it. And I just laughed from start to finish. It was amazing. And obviously Lady of the Lake was a part I was like, I'd researched it and I was like, oh my God, this is like such a ballsy, big, belty part. And that was kind of like, when I got that job, that was kind of like the first little glimmer of, oh, I'm maybe sort of on my journey to, you know, covering these parts. And then obviously then, like I said, going on to Shrek, that was the big sort of like, oh my God, okay, I'm being seen for the stuff that I think I'm right for and that I want to be seen for. And I obviously knew that Playful were in charge of Wicked as well. So it was one of those things, it was always kind of in the back of my mind where, you know, I just, every time they were in, I was like, oh, I just want to try and prove that I can do it and all of this stuff. And, you know, and it's just so funny because you think as a professional, you know, you don't think those things are going to be going through, but they are, because the little 16-year-old inside your head is going, oh my God, this, you know, just try and impress them and do it, you know. And so, but it was, yeah. And so I just, when I first got the, because I first auditioned for Wicked when the first international tour went out. Yeah. So when was that? Was that 2016? I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come through, Nikki, with your years.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah, so I got the audition through and I was like, oh my God, this is the audition. This is it. Like I'm auditioning for Wicked. Like, and even that, like having an audition for Wicked, I was like, this is huge. And so I went in and just, you know, did the old, like, I think it was like six rounds or something stupid like that. And as intense as it is, it's such an amazing, amazing audition process. And so long story short, with that one, I got down to the finals. But again, I was like, if I got offered second cover, I'd be like, oh my God, I get to play Elphaba at least once in my life. I can die happy. but again, I was like, I don't remotely think I'm going to get it, but I'm grateful that I'm even being seen and that, you know, maybe in years to come, whatever. And so, got down to the end but was waiting for the phone call and they said, you know, thank you, but no thank you. The part that we were looking at you for has already been cast. You're second in line. But obviously we all know as professionals, whenever you get that call, it does happen. But especially with Wicked, it was like, no, they're not going to turn that down. So I remember actually getting a phone call from my agent. He was like, oh, I've got some feedback for you from Playful. And I was like, amazing. And they were like, so they were actually looking at you for Standby. And I was like, no, stop. Like, what? Wow. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, so you were right down to the end for Standby. And I was like, and so if anything, it was kind of like getting the job because I was like, I don't care. If they think that I did really well and, you know, I sounded great and then I'm happy with that. I can walk away and I'll try again next year. Mm. So it was actually a really positive thing for me. And so I was like, that's given me loads of encouragement to, you know, go away, do something else, hopefully, and, you know, and then come back next year, you know, bigger and stronger. And then I was lucky enough to then get Ghost in that time, which was perfect because it was another huge, and, you know, Molly and Elphaba are very much vocally on the same level. And which I think some people forget sometimes, you know, people don't look at... Do you know
Molly
what I mean?
Molly is like the most insane. Seeing Katie Levy perform that score on West End is the most ridiculous thing ever. And then watching those clips that you posted on your Instagram, are you doing it also? Some of the most ridiculous vocals I've ever heard. You were pulling out some Katie Levy tricks.
I know. I just like, so that show, and we were really lucky as well. Because I mean, we did the Asia tour, but we were lucky enough to do the London production. So we had all of like the LED screens and all. So, and it was just like, oh my God, because I hadn't actually seen it in London. But obviously from doing it, I was like, oh my God, this is just like, I mean, I still would love them to bring it back and to actually go and see it, because obviously I haven't actually watched it from out front. But just obviously knowing just how incredible it was, and I unfortunately never got to actually do it, but I just remember like when we were doing like cover runs and stuff, like I would just literally live for those rehearsal days. I'd literally come in and be like, oh my God, I'm so ready to like learn my script and do all of this stuff. Like, and again, it was something that sat really well in my voice. It just, you know, it was amazing. And it, again, it was just another amazing part on the way, hopefully, to achieving my, you know, ultimate dream. And just every time I got these jobs, I was like, no, what? Like, who, what the hell? And then I came back from China and then auditioned for Wicked again. And yeah, again, long story short, got down to the end. And when I say, it's just not something you ever allow yourself to think about. You don't, because it's too huge, especially to someone like me. Like it, because it's so much more than a part to me. Like that show, I just honestly, it, you know, and I know it's so important to a lot of people, but when I say like Elphaba was like my ultimate dream, it was like, it's like a passion rather than, oh yeah, that's just something I'd love to do one day. And so I just, even though I knew I was auditioning for it and I knew I was doing well, like, and I, you know, as much as I'm really hard on myself and I'm a massive perfectionist, you know, I was like, no, I know they were happy with me when I did it, because they literally said in the room,
yeah,
amazing, da da da. And they were always so lovely to me, and really, you know that when they're directing you and actually taking the time, you know that there's something that they can see, because otherwise they just wouldn't waste their time, because they're seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And so I just tried to enjoy the process again and try not to put too much pressure on myself because of how huge it was. And yeah, got down to the finals again. And yeah, we had that lovely like 6-7 week long wait that you do with Wicked, because obviously,
oh my God, I don't know how you do it.
Oh, it's absolute, it
you're
is
like
utter
what
death.
If what if padding like two versions of your life based on what happens,
and you can imagine, for someone like me, like I said, and even when I auditioned for the UK tour, like I said, if I'd have been offered second cover, I would have been like, oh my God, I would have reacted exactly the same. And I remember just, yeah, so I'd, and one day the phone call came and I remember I was talking to my mum, and my phone rang and it was my agent. And I was like, oh, I'll answer that in a second. And then he rang me back straight away. And literally that's when the feeling in my stomach came upon me. I was like, why would he be ringing me? Like he would have just waited otherwise. If it was like an audition or something, he would have waited for me to call him back. And I was like, Mum, I need to go. So I went out into the garden and I rang him back. And you know when agents do that thing where if it's a no, they're like, I've just heard from so-and-so, unfortunately, you know. But when it's good news, they tend to do this thing where they go, how are you today? Yeah. Where are you? What are you doing? And so when he did that, I actually started to go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then he was like, so I've heard from Jim Arnold, and yeah, they'd like you to be standby for the UK tour. Well,
oh,
that was it. And obviously, and my agent as well, like he's known me since, it's Stephen Paling, so the director in Mamma Mia. He's known me my entire professional life.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's known that I've wanted to play Elphaba since then. So it was such that was even more perfect that he was the person, you know, his best friend is Keri Ellis. Like I remember the first time he took me to meet her. And so it was so perfect that he was the one that got to tell me, oh my God, you're going to do it. And so, yeah, to be offered standby, I was like, huh? Like, and I just, yeah, like, absolutely.
What did you do?
Like,
who did you tell first? What happened? How did that day pan out?
So I went in and I was so gutted because, like, I'm really lucky because I've got such support. I've got such a supportive family. Like, my parents are really stagey. They absolutely love theatre. So they understand how it all works. So you never really have to sort of explain anything. But when I say, like, it was as much their dream for me as it was for me. Especially my dad as well. And I'll never, my dad was, he was at work and I came in and literally, I think my mum knew because I was literally in the garden like, oh my God, I can't believe that. And I came in and she was like, literally like standing there like, did you get it? But she obviously didn't expect me to be like, I got standby. And she was like, oh my God, literally just threw her arms around me. And then it was really funny because, oh my God, I did it. Yeah, so I completely forgotten. So that day that I got the phone call, I'd been in to audition for the second UK tour of Shrek for Fiona, which is actually quite funny now because now when I look back, I'm like, hang on. So Nia was in the room. She would have known that I was getting that phone call. So that was really funny.
Like, hang on, what are you doing here? Like,
yeah. And you know, but again, I was so grateful to be called into because again, if that ever came back, it is a role I would absolutely love to go and play full time. But yeah, so I was like, I can't wait for Dad to get home. I just can't do it. So I rang my dad, just sort of, you know, pretend, you know, oh, I'll let you know how the audition went. Yeah, you know, and I can't. And I was like, hi, Dad, just thought I'd let you know, the audition went really, really well. And, you know, I've got really sort of, you know, a good feeling from it. And then I went, but it doesn't actually matter anymore. And he literally went, what, why, what? And I went, I got standby. Because that is literally how I was went to say it. And it literally ended up coming out like, I got offered standby on the tour. And he went, no, you didn't. And my dad's one of these people. He's not an emotional person at all. And literally, he was like, no, you didn't. And then he went, just give me a minute. And, like, just started crying on the phone. And, oh, my God, it was, yeah. Because, like I said, I dreamt of that moment. Like, you know, and it never goes the way you imagine it does. Like, you know, and I will never, and they just were. I mean, I can only imagine if, you know, if I had kids and that was, and to see that they'd finally got it, you know, it just, you know, and then. So then I, yeah, couldn't, but could not process it at all. And then, so even from the day I went into the rehearsal room, you know, and like stupid things, like, because I was that kid, like at the Apollo Victoria stage door, like, can you sign my program, please? Like, I was that person, like, you know, and I walked into the rehearsal room, like trying to be all professional and, you know, and, you know, I'd see like the witch's hat and the broom, like rehearsal broom.
Yeah.
And even that, I was like, Oh my God. Like, you know, and like, I remember picking it up for the first time, like doing it and putting the bag on and just like, I honestly just couldn't. And it was so amazing as well, because our company manager and our MD from Shrek, lots of the team came over to do the Wicked tour. So even more so, it was just like, I remember Dave Rose, who was our MD on Shrek, who I absolutely adore. And I would never forget, like, going into the first day, like the meet and greet. And we both just looked at each other and we were like, he was like, you did it.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, and Anthony Field, who was our company manager, just, and it just was so perfect that I got to share it with people that knew that it was my dream. It was just, honestly, it couldn't have been better. And I just absolutely adored every single minute I walked in. I remember like going into the big audition room, the big ensemble room where they were all rehearsing it, and like when they'd run things and do all of that, and I would hear the music and I'd literally just be like, oh my God, we're doing Wicked. This is Wicked. Like, that and art, and it was just, it was magical. Every single day for me was magical. It was, I think I learnt the script in like 3 days, like, because...
You probably knew it already, really.
Well, this is it. Like,
It was just a formality.
But because it's something that you're so desperate to... it just went in, and I just, yeah. And Standby was a hard thing because you pretty much learn the show from sitting down. I'm always so invested in anything, in any job that I do. I'm a massive, you know, I've got a great work ethic and all, you know, but I was even more invested in this because it was just like, you know, so I just tried to absorb every little bit of the process because it just meant so much to me. And yeah, and obviously then we went on tour and I had the best year and a half of my life.
Tell me about your first time going on, your first show. Was it planned? Did you get a call that day?
Yes, I was really lucky. I actually knew when my first show was going to be when we were still rehearsing.
Wow.
Because we were doing our schedule in Zurich where we opened was a double back-to-back weekend. So they said, you get to do a day every week. So I was like, oh my God, this is even better. And they actually told me what the first day was going to be. So I had all that. So I knew, and you know, it was just, you know, it was amazing. And I remember doing my cover run, and it was literally like the day before. And just like, I mean, even things like when I've got photos of like when I tried the dress on for like, and I was so lucky as well. All of my costumes were made for me. I think the only one I had from someone else was the final like nighty dress, which still, I say nighty, it still probably costs about $5,000. Like, the world's most expensive nighty.
That's my kind of nighty, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And did you get to keep those costumes when you went into town as well? Was it the same costumes?
Yeah.
I've been so lucky to see some of them up close, and I've been back to do interviews, and they're the most stunning. You do not appreciate the detail in the audience.
No, and that's the thing, because every single dress is completely unique. And I think my dress as well was one of the first dresses to be made when they made the arms see-through with the green coming through the arms. Yeah. And just like you said, like on the arms, they have like little tiny hand-stitched cobwebs. And like, it's honestly, the detail on them is just exquisite is the only word I can say. And for me to also know that is mine, like it is made for me, I was like, this is just blowing my mind right now. And
wait, so your first show, what happened?
Okay, so my first show, yeah. So I woke up and I was like, right, try not to get overwhelmed with this moment, because it's so easy to do that because of how huge it and how much it means to you. And in my head, I was like, right, you don't have the pressure of loads of people coming to see you because you don't know anyone over here. So actually it's like you get to perfect your performance before you come back to the UK when everyone starts to come and watch you. And I was actually really calm. And I was like, I want to be excited. I don't want to be nervous. I want to be excited. And so that not having that pressure of having people there actually helped. And again, just was embracing every minute of it. And just, I remember, and I've also got one of the pictures, because I remember seeing it. I think it was a Jenny Denoa picture of when she stood behind the cog doors, holding the suitcase ready to run out. And I was like, I would love to have a photo like that. And my dresser, Kath, who was, again, a dear friend of mine, she was a dresser on Shrek, and she took the picture for me when I was literally standing there, which I wasn't aware of at the time. And I just remember being behind there and just thinking, this is it. You are about to run out of those doors and be Elphaba. And it's just an uncomprehendable thought. Like, you just can't process it. And I enjoyed every minute of it. I loved it. It was, I mean, it went by like, you know, lightning, but it was so incredible. The cast were just amazing. And yeah, it was just the best feeling. And I'll never forget, like at the end of the show, we had like all the creators, like Michael McCabe, everyone was, we were all crying. and it was, and then, so I was in the dressing room, like already crying and just like, oh my God, I can't believe I've just done it. And so Anthony Field comes in and he goes, I've got some people to see you. Well, then my mum walks around the corner, don't she?
No!
my mum and my auntie walk around the corner. Well, and again, I've got video evidence. I just collapsed. I was like, it was, yeah. And so my mum had, unfortunately, my dad couldn't get off work. So he came the following weekend, because that was the only thing that would have made it literally like perfect, is that my dad could have been there on my first ever show. But yeah, my mum, amazing. She was like, and I get it, because she, you know, she was like, how could I miss that? Like, and yeah, she, and obviously she knew Anthony, and, you know, she'd been in contact with him for weeks about getting there, and I had no idea. My auntie came, who's like my second mum, and yeah, it was just, it was amazing. And then yeah, so obviously after that, Michael McCabe was crying, Lee and Dave Rose, they were all crying, and oh my gosh, it was just, it was so emotional, and it just, it was, yeah, it was the absolute best feeling in the world, the absolute best feeling in the world. And so you can imagine when it then turned into London, it was just on like a completely different scale. Like,
did you ever get used to it whilst you were touring? Did you ever get used to it? You know, because it's, you don't have that routine because you never know what's happening. And I know there were times you were going on a lot, weren't you? Sometimes, and you weren't, maybe for a little bit. And it must be so like up and down and up and down. But some people love that. Some people find that harder.
Yeah. So I actually was fine with it. I never had any problems. I was always, you always have to sort of have the mindset of, you could, especially with a role like that, anything can happen. Yeah. You know, you can wake up one day and think you're absolutely fine, and then go and do The Wizard and I and be like, nope, this ain't happening. And then you've got to do a witch switch. And so I always tried to sort of like put myself in the headspace of every time, you know, every time I was in that building, there was always a chance that I could go on. So I would always make sure that, you know, when we'd come back up from warm up and everything, that I would sing along with the show. I mean, not every single day, you know, but I would always make sure that my voice was warm. I wouldn't, you know, say, for example, like when I was in Mamma Mia and I was a swing, I'd stick a film on, I'd like chill out, go to sleep. Like, I probably shouldn't say that now, but you know, but that was a completely different mindset. It's like you had to sort of always be at the ready. You know, and it did happen. There were times when I had to do a witch switch, and so I had to be ready within like 5 minutes. I had the best time, and I was really lucky. I got to go on quite a lot. I was on pretty much every single week, because it is just such a mentally and physically demanding role. It's kind of inhuman sometimes to see people do it 8 shows every single week. It's just, it's not realistic. No. And so, yeah, I managed to actually be in quite a good place where it was kind of like muscle memory. So every time I went on, it didn't feel like, it had only sort of ever been sort of like the most would be a week, I guess, like, you know, between. So I was really lucky in that sense, that I was able to build up that stamina and build up that routine. And so it was amazing. And it obviously then worked out to be the perfect training for, you know, going into town. And yeah,
did you know when you were leaving the tour, did you know that town was happening, or was that?
No. So
you had to say goodbye to it, do your last show and not know.
Yeah. And again, I was so lucky that I was able to actually perform on the last day. So I performed the last matinee, and Amy did the evening. So again, that was, you know, that never happens, you know, because as much as you're so lucky that you're a standby and you get to do it all the time, and, you know, you do miss out on the, and because you're on your own, you don't have a standby Glinda, because on tour you only have the one standby, you know, so you don't get to share those moments where it's your last show. And so I felt so lucky and grateful that I was able to have that. And well, it was just, I mean, even when you watch the recordings, I'm like, that is what pure gratitude, joy looks like on stage. And it just, I was singing for my life, and I just absolutely embraced. And I knew all the creatives were there, so obviously in the back of my mind I was like, right, I would love to be seen for I would love to be seen for standby for town, because that's like the natural progression, because I still see standby in town as a step up, you know, because it's a whole different, you know, thing. And so in my head I was like, you know, And they haven't seen me for since my opening in Zurich. So I would love to, you know, I want to see the, I want them to see my development and how, you know. And so I, as much as I wanted to enjoy it, and to, I also wanted, it was kind of like an audition in my head. You know, and it I just had the absolute best show of my life. And I, you know, and Michael McCabe came up on stage afterwards, which I had no idea about.
And did like,
did like this massive speech. And I just was like, oh my God, like, you know, bawling my eyes out, trying to stay professional, you know. And so it, I just felt so loved. And so it, oh, it just was perfect. So then when it got to the evening show, it was really lovely because I was able to watch it and just love it and not feel like, oh, I wish I was up there with you guys. And, you know, that sort of, you know, so you've got that camaraderie feeling with your family. It was perfect. It was lovely. So yeah, but, so it went, so a few months went by and I knew sort of obviously roughly what time of year they started auditioning. And my agent called me and he said, oh, unfortunately, you know, the standby's not, you know, lovely Laura's not, she's not leaving. So, and I was like, no, totally fine. All good. You know, I've just done it for a year and a half. Like, I'll wait till next year. It's all good. And I, you know, a bit like, if I was her, I wouldn't leave either. And, you know, and so I'd put it to bed. And, but then literally like 3 weeks later, my agent called me and he was like, oh, so just had a call. And they'd like to see you. And I was like, okay. Fair enough. But again, I was like, I knew standby wasn't available. And when I say it again, it's one thing doing it in a touring production, and that's not underplaying it at all, but it's a whole different thing doing it in the West End. That's like the flagship, you know, and when you look at the people that have played it, you just, again, you know you can do it because you've just done it, but you don't ever think, there's just no way that I'm ever going to get that. But in my head, again, I was like, no, it's still just really good to go in, show my development, have a new video sent to America. So it's a new, fresh, new and improved version of me. And, you know, so it's always good. I always think it's always good to do that with those types of things. And so, yeah, so I went in, did everything again.
So you knew it was like, you knew it was for the lead, but you just were like, you just. Yeah. Didn't really take it seriously. Yeah, you were like, this is realistic. Yeah.
I was like, they're probably just backing themselves up or something, you know. So, and obviously, like, the weeks went by and it was kind of, it got to a point because I was never sort of like, oh my God, I just need to know. Because I just never thought, I never allowed myself to think it was a possibility. And then there was this one day, I was sat with my best friend and the phone rang and it was my agent. And I just knew that that was going to be the phone call. And I remember saying to him, I was like, look, I'm totally fine. Don't feel uncomfortable if it's a no. I'm not going to like break down and cry. Like it's like I was ready for my no now, so I can kind of like move on. And also, like, I'd been cast in Priscilla in this process.
I forgot about that. You've been announced as a diva in Priscilla. I forgot all about that.
Andrew, I completely forget about it. Like, it, yeah. So, you know, so in my head I was like, well, I've already agreed to do a job, like, you know, and an amazing job at that. Like, what an amazing, and again, if I ever get the opportunity again, I would love to do it. I remember saying, and I was like, I just want my no now so I can kind of like know what I'm doing and move on with my life a little bit. And like I said before, they normally go, oh, you know, what are you doing? No. So Stephen rang me and literally I answered the phone. He went, Nikki, you got the job. And well, I'd literally just went silent and was like, what? And I think genuinely was like, I went into shock. I was like, no. And he had my other agent, Debbie Jenkins, on speakerphone on the phone. So she was like, so it was like two, like three phones. Like, and she was on the train with her husband, like going home. And so we were all on the phone. And then when it started, and then the tears started coming and I was just like, and again, I've got photos of this moment. And I mean, ugly crying is an understatement. Like it's. And I mean, I can't put that moment into words because it did take a good, it even took up to like my first costume fitting to really go, this is actually happening. I'm actually going to be Elphaba in the West End. like I'm actually going to have achieved my one and ultimate dream. Like, how do you comprehend that? Like, how do you process that? And it just, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. And it just, and it was really hard as well, because it was, he was like, I'm so sorry. He was like, you can tell your family, but you have to be like sworn to secrecy because of loads of things that are going on. And so it was really hard for so long to like, because loads of people, and you know how, you know what this community is like. Everybody knows everyone. Everyone knows everything. So I'd have people messaging me and I'm like, they know. And they're trying to get it out of me. And I'm just not allowed to say anything. And it just, yeah. And then obviously like the day of the announcement, I set my alarm and like I woke up and just my phone just went absolutely crazy. I just, yeah, and even like the photo shoot we did prior for that announcement, I just all those types of things, I was just like, what is happening? Like, what? Like, we went to, where were we? The Rose something hotel, like this massively posh hotel in London, you know, and we rocked up and they were like, yeah, we've got you a suite. And I was like, what? Like, this is just so crazy to me. Like, you know, because it's like in a weird way, I'd felt like an ensemble member that just got a lucky break. Like, you know, no, but in all fairness, you know, like I didn't have any of these stories of like, I've auditioned for Wicked like 7 years in a row and never got it. And, you know, and I just, and because that was one of the other reasons why I never thought I was going to get it, because I was like, I've never actually, as much as I've covered these and played a lot of times these amazing parts, I've never owned a role. I've never, you know, so I was like, even from a business point of view, even though they know I can do it, you know, that's a huge thing to, you know, I was like, that's like, surely the growth is to go into town as a standby. And then I just never thought that I'd get given that chance to do it. And it just was, yeah, I could not believe it. And just when everyone found out, it was, yeah, it was just so magical, because people that are from college had literally been, you know, that I hadn't spoken to and knew that it was, they were just like, oh my God, you've done it. Like, and it just, yeah, it was just absolutely amazing. And I, again, when I told my parents, like, I mean,
we used to do another podcast in the future, and this time have your parents on as well. We'll do like a round table.
My dad would love that.
We could all discuss theatre. We'll just discuss, love it. Like top 10 yes. favourite shows and stuff. We'll just go fight it out.
They would be so all over that. I love it. And yeah, it just, and like I said, when I went into every process after that, like when I went to the, you know, to have my costumes adjusted and all of that kind of stuff, you know, walking in and seeing them and them going, Mickey.
And then you got your lovely dressing room.
Oh my God. This is what I mean. These were the kind of things that just blew my mind, because I was like, I am now in the dressing room where Idina Menzel sat, Keri Ellis sat, all of these people that, and now it's my dressing room.
I know. Like, honestly, I've been in that room a couple of times to do interviews with Elphabers. And like, I used to do it quite a lot. Like, you know, it wasn't a big deal to go backstage, but I'd walk into that room and I would be like, that was the times when I really had to internally just be like, okay, Andrew, you're a professional journalist. Like, just keep going.
Yeah. And I had been in there a couple of times, like, because, you know, I'd been to see Alice, and it just, because I'd got in contact with Alice when I was doing Shrek, because obviously, you know, it's like,
yeah, because you were both Gingies who graduated to Stab Alpha and into Alpha.
Following in her footsteps. And it was so funny. We bonded over neck injuries from that bloody Gingy puppet.
Yeah.
And so obviously, like, when I went to see her in London, she was like, you know, come up and have, you know, have a glass of champagne. And, you know, and I was in there, and I remember I said, she was like, this is going to be yours soon, darling. And I was like, you can imagine her saying that, can't you? Like,
yeah, I can.
And you know what? Going back to when I was standby, actually, I have to say this, because I think it was so important. With the stigma that comes with Elphaba, and, you know, it being such a, because I always say it is definitely an 80% mental, 20% physical. That 20% of physical is still massively hard, but it's a mental thing. Absolutely. Because there are loads of people that can sing that, it's definitely a mental thing, that role. It takes a lot to, you know, and I'll never forget when I, you know, and you always hear of all these people that do all these rituals, and I've always tried to be one of those people that didn't do rituals, because you then become obsessive about it. It then becomes a thing. And I just tried to be as chilled as possible. I didn't want it to become a scary thing. And I remember rocking up to shadow her backstage when I was doing the tour. And I loved it. She was literally sat there having a Lucozade, having a chocolate bar or something. So chilled. And I was like, this is perfect. And it honestly helped me so much just to see how chilled she was with it. And it really, really did help me when I went on tour to kind of like be like, you're fine. It's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it just, all of those things, like when everything the second time round being like, no, you're not standby anymore. This is your part. It's yours. And yeah, and the rehearsal process the second time round was, I absorbed it even more, and I just adored it, because, and it was lovely as well, because I was able to go in and not have to worry about what I was saying, not have to worry about where I was going, because I knew all of that. Yes, there were some slight changes, but so I could really invest in rediscovering my alphabet and, yeah, you know, stuff. So that was, and, you know, and I, oh, Petra, I just absolutely adore her. That team are one of the best team ever. They looked after me more than I can ever say. They encouraged me. And honestly, I wouldn't have been where I was if it wasn't for them, without their support, without their encouragement, everything. And it just, because it was, I was still so daunted into going into this thing. And like I said, I had the mentality of, I've just got a lucky break here. Like, you know, I've always been a very humble person. Sometimes that works in a negative way, because, you know, we'll probably touch on it, but, you know, where you do need to have a bit of that ball, especially doing a part like that, that you can't have doubt in yourself. You can't, because it will just be, you know, it will be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And they just encouraged me so much and were like, we love what you're doing. And so every day I went in, I was like, yes, I'm so ready for this. And it was, the rehearsal process was just incredible. And when we went on the stage for the first time and I looked out into the auditorium and I was just like, I actually have no words for it, because that is literally how I just was like, again, how do you like process that? Like, I just, honestly, I sound like a crazy person, but it just, honestly,
I think there's a lot of people listening right now who won't think you're a crazy person at all. I think it's a very special thing.
Honestly, I just looked out into, and I looked at like the area where I sat in the stalls, and you just think like, how has that done a whole 360? How have I achieved this? Like, this is, you know, and it was just, yeah. And it was, you know, for the, as long as it did last, it was the absolute, and the like, going on to my first show, that was, again, I was like, right, this is huge. I don't want to be overwhelmed by the moment. And also, I was so lucky that I had Helen Wolfe, who I think is the best Glinda ever in the entire world. She is just...
She did one of these and we could hardly get through it because we couldn't be serious. It was so funny. I love
she
her.
She is just one of... not only one of the most talented human beings I've ever met in my life, just... She's so down to earth. She's so funny. And we had such a great like chemistry on tour. That's, again, what made it even better, because I was like, oh my God, we work so well together. I think our voices blend amazingly together, you know, because she has got, I mean, she's one of these people that could play both. Yeah. I would love to see her play Alphabet one day, because she has got pipes for days. And she was just born to play Glinda. She's just incredible, and I felt so lucky, you know, to have had her with me. And then also as well, when I knew I was doing it with Alistair Brammer, I was like, are you joking, like, what the hell? I've got a bloody Broadway star as my Fiero, like. And I had Kim as well from the tour, and you know, just all of these people that were just always so, just, they're just wonderful. The entire cast, you know, Andy Hocklett, just everybody. I just love them and I miss them all so much. And it just, yeah, it didn't end how I wanted it to end, but you know, it was the first show was run, and because like you will know, the hype in London when it's a cast change is just on another level, and I knew that there was going to be a reaction. It's like when I was getting ready and I heard over the tannoy, like when Helen first came down in the bubble and everyone was like, "Wah!" And I was like, "Oh my God." Like, you know, and I had all my, and you know, that's why it doesn't matter to me anymore about my dad not being there for my first show in Zurich, or my agents for that matter, you know, because they were all there that night for the West End. You know, that trumps absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And when I ran out of those doors and just, it just erupted and I was just like, compose, compose, mm. compose. mm. And do you know what? I had the best show. I was so relaxed. I took every bit of it in. And because that's all that I wanted. I was like, you are never going to get this moment ever again in your life. Like, what, you will never be able to relive your first show as Elphaba in the West End at the Victoria Apollo Theatre.
Insane. Oh, I have all the goosebumps. I know, all the feels.
Honestly, it's just, even when I talk about it now, I'm just like, what the hell? Like, how has this happened? It was just magical, and you know, unfortunately life circumstances happened and what happened, you know.
What I want to say is you did this amazing Instagram post during lockdown where you posted this recording of you singing to Fan Gravity, saying it was like the first time you kind of sung that or sung, you know, properly for a while, and then you wrote about, you spoke about anxiety and mental health, and you wanted to basically help other people, because we all know that in this industry especially there are so many people who have their own battles, and whilst we do talk about it more, it still has touched like a taboo subject and something that people don't quite understand.
It has such a stigma.
You know, you did it in your time and you spoke about it when you wanted to speak about it. I just thought, all I wanted to say about it, I thought that was a really amazing thing to do.
Thank
you. Would have helped so many people, and you will help more people when they kind of read that in the future when they're going through their own struggles, etc.
Yeah. Really, it was a really funny thing for me, because when it, you know, really long story short, basically we had like a tragedy in the family. My dad had a really serious car accident and nearly lost his life. Oh, and that actually happened when we were on tour. And long story short, basically it was delayed. I had developed PTSD from that traumatic experience because I hadn't dealt with it. Because as you do with any family matter, you go into survival mode. You know, I was looking after my mum and my dad, and I just wanted to, you know, and when I got offered Wicked, that was like the huge light in the darkest time that my family's been through. And, you know, from, you know, going to therapy and, you know, discovering, you know, because when it because when I started, you know, I did a month of all eight shows. I was like, you know, and it was absolutely in my capability. Like, it's nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, that's probably why I kind of want to talk about it now, because it's not something I talk about a lot. My anxiety wasn't directly related to the show. It wasn't the Elphaba demon that some people get. There was obviously, I'm not going to pretend there weren't elements of that, but they were elements normally with a healthy headspace you can overcome and go, I know I can sing it. I'd felt a bit of it on tour. How could you not, when you've got to sing these huge, you know?
Yes.
And so basically what had happened is, because you're, you know, the therapist explained, because your mind is in such a vulnerable state because of the PTSD and all of that, and because I'd then been put into this such high pressured situation, you know, and I, you know, I was my own worst enemy because I'm a perfectionist. I, you know, like I said, the team, everybody could not have been more supportive. And it just, I was loving life and it was going exactly how, I'd envisioned everything to be going. And then just like these little niggles started creeping in and I was like, okay. And also as well, again, someone like me who hadn't played a part before, there was this huge pressure that I put on myself, you know, thinking that I had to prove myself. I didn't want to fall under this Elphaba stigma that, you know, people say. And so if anything, that kind of counteracted, because it put more pressure on me rather than just getting on and doing it. I was worrying so much about, you know, what people thought, you know, was I living up to people's expectations? And, you know, in hindsight, of course I was, but I wasn't living up to my own expectations, which is just so ridiculous. Because, you know, I look back now and I listen to recordings and I just go, I'm putting my head in my hands right now, people. You know, and I was, and going back to what you were saying about the whole stigma thing about it, I didn't know what was happening to me. And two, I was so scared to say anything because I was like, I can't say anything because then they'll be like, why did we take a chance on this girl? She's not cut out for it. She's, you know, it was too big of a role to give her first off. And so obviously that made me stay quiet for a good few months because I was too scared to say anything, you know. And then unfortunately it just developed into, I don't even get it even now. It's such a hard thing to explain to people. But basically, long story short, my anxiety was brought on by the PTSD from a traumatic experience that we went through in my life. Yeah. And because obviously I was then put into a high pressure situation, that's because I said, I don't understand why it's related to the show, because I know I can do it. It's nothing to do with me thinking I can't do the role or I can't sing it or anything like that. You know, and I said, I don't understand why it's relating to, and she said, it's because it's such a high pressure situation, your mind is in a vulnerable state. So normally when you would have normal sort of everyday anxieties, as performers do, of course you do. Whenever you get an audition, you're like, oh my God, am I going to have a sore throat when I have an audition or whatever? Because your mind is in a vulnerable state, the demons are allowed to sort of thrive, basically. Yeah. Yeah, and it just, and then once you're on that wheel, there's no getting off. And unfortunately, by the time I did sort of reach out, and I mean, to be fair, it got to a point where they knew something was wrong, but they couldn't approach me until I approached them, basically, which I do kind of disagree with. I do get what they're saying, but I do think, you know, as much as they offer physiotherapy at the beginning of a contract, I do think because it's something that has happened many times with that part, I do think it's something they should offer at the beginning and go, it's not for everybody, but it has been known that this part can get on top of people. And, you know, we just want you to know, if you ever feel that you just want to kind of talk to somebody, we are offering this. I do feel that might have, you know, but again, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But, and it did get better for a while, because once I understood what it was and I was like, it's not to do with the show. I'm relating it to the show because it's a very high pressured situation. And I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to bring joy and happiness to my family because everyone's so sad, you know, from doing this. But it's not my capability of doing the job, you know. But then within a month, it just I was too far in to heal it before, unfortunately. And then by the time it got to January, I was just so ill at that point, and I hate using that term, but that's the only sort of real term I can say. It just got to such a point that my agent was like, I can't keep you in this contract, basically, you know. So that puts an end to all the rumors of that I was fired and all of this stuff, just so you know. Because I've got the most wonderful agents in the world, you know. And also as well, you know, you don't want it to damage your career. And that's the one thing I can take away from it, is that I never let it affect my show. Obviously, cast members and people knew when I was on stage, like they would know if I was having a day, but the audience, that was the one thing I just tried with every ounce of my strength and every ounce of my being to not, when I was in, you know. And again, people are making out I was doing two shows a week. I was doing five shows a week minimum. And that was because that's what I was told. I was only allowed to do that many, you know, whilst I was in like the healing process, whatever. Yeah. And it just, that was the one thing I was like, I cannot, if this is happening to me, I cannot allow it to be shown on stage, because then my career will be over. No one will hire me again, you know. And it isn't about my capability as an actor or as a performer. It's to do with personal, you know, and it's just unfortunate that it's affecting my professional life as it would with anyone else. It's just that unfortunately we have to go in and perform in front of thousands of people rather than sit in front of a computer screen, you know. And it just, that's the one thing I can take away and go, so that's why when the announcement came out that I'd left, the people were like, what? Didn't even know something was wrong. And I was like, well, you know. So that's one thing I kind of, on bad days, I kind of look back and go, well, you know, if you think you're not strong, you have to be. I was bloody strong to still put myself on that stage. Absolutely. With the way I was feeling. And it's really funny, even there's some recordings that I've listened to, and I remember the exact show that it was. And I listened to the record, and again, it takes a lot for me to like say, oh my God, I sound amazing. Like, I'm not someone that sort of says that a lot. But I listen to them and I go, I was riddled with anxiety that show. Yeah. And I sounded like that. But at the time, I was like, oh no, you did such a show. And again, you just add, you're just piling on this pressure all the time. And it's like I get angry about it now, because I look back and I'm just like, because I know, like, I'll say to you, Andrew, like, I was born to play that role. I was. And I will try my damned hardest to get back there one day and finish it properly.
And I will be there in that audience.
Because it just, and that's, so that post that I put out.
Yeah.
It wasn't, because the reason I didn't talk about it a lot was because, one, I didn't want to be remembered for the girl that left Wicked with anxiety. And it's not that I'm ashamed of it at all. I'm not. I'm glad that it was able to highlight things for a lot of people. And, you know, again, I wanted to reach out to other, and people did. I had fellow performers who I look up to, you know, message me and be like, I had that. And I was like, no, what? And so in that sense, it was so lovely. And, the theatre community showed me so much love. And it just, I didn't want to then become like an advocate for it, because it's not something I want to be remembered for. And that's not because I'm ashamed of it or anything like that, but it's because it was due to a personal trauma. It wasn't due to, I had anxiety brought on because I was playing Elphaba in the West End and it was too hard, and it was because it wasn't that. I need people to know that. And that post, you know, I didn't want to go into like massive detail. I mean, this is the first time I've actually said what happened to, you know, why the reason was, but like it, you know, I thought it was about time to, one, put an end to, you know, because again, as wonderful and as amazing as the fandom of Wicked is, sometimes it can be a very negative place as well.
That's what social media is like, isn't it?
Wherever, oh my God. It can be a huge positive. Yeah, it can be a huge positive, and it can also be such a negative. And I always find it so funny. I'm like, you call yourselves fans of the show, but some of the stuff you guys say, questionable. And so it was a bit like, I can kind of put it to bed now by doing this. And I'd done the recording for a dear friend of mine who was doing just one of the online concerts for his company.
Yeah.
And he was like, can you sing Defying Gravity? And I was like, do you know what? Yeah, I can. Yeah, I will. And I literally sat on my landing. Because again, for ages, when I left the show, I literally hid away from the world. Like, I went into this like crazy headspace where I like deleted all my followers on Instagram, because I was like, no, everyone's going to unfollow me, and I can't stand to see that every day. Yeah. So I'm just going to get rid of it. It's, you honestly go through the weirdest headspaces. So anyone that I deleted, I'm so sorry. But yeah, it just, I hid away for months. I was like, no, I couldn't even think about singing. I couldn't. So the thought of singing Wicked, I was like, nope. And then when obviously I started going to therapy and we discovered why it happened, you know, continuing after. And that's when I was like, and it was only a matter of like 8 weeks that I then went, no, I would want to go back one day. Like, you know, and so I know some people have gone, never again, never again. No, like, I,
get,
you know,
me on that broom.
And that's now a thing, you know I need to go away and do other things, and I need to do all of, you know, but I want to get back there one day and finish my journey properly and how it should have been, because it was horrendous what happened to me, and it's something I don't think I'll ever really get over. But you know, I'm trying to make the most of that horrible situation. And you know, I just felt like it's the first time I'd sung it again since it happened. It's
and
the first time
I'd... And you smashed it. It was incredible.
Literally sat on my landing. How hilarious is that?
Can I just say that I think, I want to say a few things. First of all, I think your talent, it speaks for itself. And I never got to see you as Elphaba. I'm gutted. But, I may have listened to one of your YouTube videos. And it speaks for itself. But seeing you as Gingy and seeing you belt out Free Flag and seeing the stuff you did with Ghost, you know, your talent speaks for itself. I think people know that. And people don't know what's happening. It's kind of irrelevant. It's not It's kind of separate. And I like to think that we are getting to a more understanding place, and there will always be people on social media. We're never gonna change that, but I guess it's about kind of deciding where to channel your energy. And from the second we started this conversation, you are so passionate. You have the most exciting energy. You love theatre. I love your background with your parents and how much they love theatre. And that is infectious. And you will continue to, anyone you meet and any audition you go into, they will be able to feel that and how hungry you are and how excited you are, and then see how talented you are. And you know, you will soar, you'll fly. Like, it.
Thank you.
I really don't think to someone to label you as, oh, that person that left Wicked or that person that couldn't do it. It's kind of, I think that's to be irrelevant, and that I don't know. I think going forwards, I think you won't have a problem, because, like I say, your talent and your energy and who you are speaks for itself.
Well, that you're gonna make me cry,
no,
Andrew.
No, dear. I'm not in the room. I can't hug you.
we'll do like an elbow touch.
A zoomed elbow. God, love sake, that. This world.
Oh God. Well, that honestly, that means the absolute world, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I will not be defined by that moment at all. And you know, I'm trying. That's, you know, so I've spent this year getting back on the wagon, you know, and I did, you know, I got asked to do that an amazing
that concert
thing
with
Thespey,
other Wicked people,
the concert with Thespey, and you know, and just so that was an incredible opportunity to actually perform, and with those people as well, you know, it just, so you know, and I've got my own concert coming up at the Chiswick Playhouse in April, and it's just so that, you know, I'm gonna get back. I'm gonna come back. I'm more resilient. I'm stronger.
You've got amazing agents who are supporting you and understanding.
Just the best people on this earth. I could not be more, because that's the thing as well. Like the overwhelming feel of failure that I felt when I first left. That I had let everyone down. That's what overwhelmed me the most, is that I'd let all of these people that believed in me down. And it was just the most wretched, horrible, awful feeling, you know, and they have, and Playful, just like, you know, just have to say, you know, they stood by me and supported me throughout that contract more than I could have asked for. And they went above and beyond. You know, what can we do to help? I just want to make a note of that. Like, they did. They went above and beyond. You know, whatever you need to help you, we'll do it. And, you know, they, you know, so, and I, like, I'd worked for Playful before, and
yeah,
I just,
they knew you,
I pray that they hire me again. And I just, you know, it's not a case of I will not be defined by that moment. And I will not be known as the girl that left Wicked, because things happen in life you have absolutely no control over, and I may not ever get the opportunity, but I will try my damned hardest to get back there one day and finish it properly and how I should have done, because I know that I'm f***ing amazing at that part. So, like, you know, and again, everyone that knows me in this industry knows that I never say that about myself, never. But I do. And that's, unfortunately, at the time, I didn't think that. And that massively contributed to, you know, the anxiety as well. You know, you really do have to believe in yourself. You have to trust in your talent, because otherwise these things happen. And it just, I will get back there one day. I have to. I will. And and I'm excited for what other new things are coming along, you know, because Wicked's been a part of my life for the last, you know, three, four years. Yeah. And so it will be so exciting to audition for. It's so funny. I was talking to my friend the other day and I said, we are all going to be so excited for that one phone call where they go, so I've got an audition for you. You're literally going to be like,
yes! Like, get me in that room.
What is it? Yeah. And literally, I can't even imagine like going into the room for the first time and seeing the audition panel and just being like, I'm so happy to be here. Like, it's going to be so good. And just, it's just, and I can't even begin to imagine like the feeling of those opening nights of those shows in town and just, you know, that... Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Can I ask you, I've got two stagey alpha questions I need to
get
in. Okay. I want to talk about riffing. I want to talk about theatre is theatre, and it's wonderful. It's not a riff off. But, you know, some of us, we like a sly little thing. And you may have done a few little, Nickyisms when you were painted green. That. So tell me about putting your mark on it and when you kind of like pulled out a few little things and did you get in trouble?
Do you know what? It is such a thing, because I have such a contradicting opinion of this, because everybody, and this is the thing, it kind of comes with the territory, especially when you go into London, that you feel a bit of a pressure that you have to have something, you know, in your pocket on a Saturday night or something to, you know. Most of my riffs, as we call them, I'm not actually a very good riffer. It's just I'll sing a bit of a higher note on this note or whatever. They all have to actually be approved by the MD. They are totally aware of, you know, the stigma and the reputation, and they know how much the fans love it and all of that. And so there are some that they go, if you can do it and you can do it well, we'll allow it. There are others that we just categorically do not want. And if you do it, you're going to get into trouble. And, you know, and I used to love doing it because the reaction you get is amazing. But I'm actually one of those people, I actually think the score suits my voice better when you just sit. Like, I can actually, it has a huge, because the score doesn't need to be any more than what's written, because it is, it's written for a reason. You know, these notes are written to relay the story. And, you know, I am a firm believer in it not being a pop concert, you know, as much, this is why I'm saying I contradict myself, because we've all done it and it's fun when you do it. But also I do think there is a line for my voice, for example. I've got quite a clear sort of musical theatre tone. So it actually stands out more when I hold and sustain notes rather than sort of riffing around on them. So, you know, I actually quite liked just singing the score. You know, and to be fair, the score's hard enough on its own. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're talking like you're only having to belt like a top C or something. It's like, no. I was very comfortable with just singing the show as is. And I felt like, you know, and I had a lot of people actually say, you know, it's so nice to hear it sung that way because it's so powerful in your voice. And, you know, but yeah. I remember there was one night I only did what was allowed. There was only once, I think we were on tour in Liverpool, and I did this like crazy riff. And
on what? What was it? What did
it
you
was
do?
On, it was on the, oh, defying gravity, like literally. And I remember Dave Rose came in the next day and he was like, Nikki, can I have a word, please? And I was like, I'm really sorry. I just got really excited and I got a bit carried away. He was like, it sounds great, but no. So I never really got like told off. And of course, I never, ever, ever want to be disrespectful, because I think sometimes it can come across in a very disrespectful way that you think you have the right to do that. So from that moment, I was very much like, all of the riffs I ever did were agreed and cleared by the MDs. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's annoying that sometimes you feel the pressure you have to do them, because otherwise if you don't do them, you're classed as like a boring alphabet, which is something I think is just,
God forbid,
absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I do think as long as you can keep it, if it can kind of still be related to the story, it works. But if it's kind of like Celine Dion as Elphaba, that's when you go into the territory of it being a bit, do you know what I mean? It's such sticky ground, but people love it and they are fun to do. So there are, you know, when you're on a Saturday night or a Friday night and you whack out a riff and you hear the audience go, wah! You know, it is an amazing feeling, and it is just amazing. It is fun. It's one of those things. It's, you agree why you're not allowed to do it, but you also agree.
Be like, occasionally. Yeah, absolutely. I'll take that adrenaline kick. I'll take it.
Absolutely, 100%.
And then talking of adrenaline kicks, tell me, and then we'll move on from Wicked, we'll wrap it up. But tell me, you're doing Defying Gravity, it's building, you can feel that adrenaline, all this stuff is happening.
I know what you're gonna say.
And then you run back, you get into the cherry picker, and when you run back and you're before you do that final moment, what is going through your head? What did you think about? What was happening? Were you like, what where were you at? Where were you at that moment? I love asking people this question. I haven't done it for years.
So it's like, there's two answers. One is like the practical, where it's like, okay, don't get the cape stuck in the arm. Make sure you get it closed on time. Make sure you don't get the bag stuck. But no, it's like, I can't actually pinpoint like an actual thought process of like, oh my God, this is it. This is the moment. Because it all happens so quickly. And like I said, because you've got so much to think about in that space of like 5 seconds, where you've got to get your cloak over the top of the cherry picker. You've got to get the doors closed and make sure that they're touching so that it says to the system, yep, they're good to go. You've got to make sure that your broom's in the right. Oh my God. Like it just, you know, it's one of those moments. There's so much to think about, but it's, I remember my first show. It was actually when I stood up, when it goes, she stands up and she's got the broom and everything in her hand. And I was like, oh my God, it's building to that moment. And it's like my first Defying Gravity in London. And so from that moment, that's when I could feel like the adrenaline building for like, oh my God, I'm good. And flying in London is so much better than it is on tour, because obviously naturally the cherry picker is built into the stage. So it's goes so much higher. It's so much bigger. And it's just, that feeling when you're in the air, just going up, oh my, it is just the best feeling in the world. And that moment is, it's so quick, but my biggest fear has always been don't drop the broom, because it's, and do you know why? Because it's never been done, apparently. It's never been dropped from up in the cherry picker. And I always, that's why when I was saying about the cloak, because sometimes the cloak gets caught in all the in all the twigs, and you feel it go and you're like, oh my God, like, and honestly, because you know it's never been done, you're like, oh my God. It's like someone saying, don't look over the edge of that cliff.
Yes.
It's awful. But luckily I never did. it's just, it's...
Some poor ensemble member would get be taken out by a broom.
Can you actually imagine? And you would have to just keep singing.
Like, oh my God,
I've given someone concussion down there and I can't see
funny.
Until it's black.
It's not even funny.
No, I know, but it, oh God. Yeah. So it's just, So if I'm honest, like there's no sort of like, of course your adrenaline's rising because you know it's that, like my absolute favourite bit to do. And it's really funny because I remember when I was in college and I'd literally be in like my bathroom and this is the bit I'd do in the mirror when you're like, it's not her. She has nothing to do with it. And I would always literally practice that like every day in my mirror. And so when you get to say that in the moment, like, oh, I love that moment. It's so good. It's like such, that's when I feel the adrenaline. So it's like, I've run back. I'm like, okay, make sure you've done it. Yep. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yep. Cool. And then I'm like, yes. And then you get like game face on and that's, I love that moment. And it's the best feeling. Mm. Because it's like a really gritty moment. Mm. And then just, when it goes up, it's just like, oof. Do you know what I thought you were going to say? Because what I thought you were going to say was, is that, oh yeah, that adrenaline's building. You run to the back, you get in the cherry picker, and then it doesn't fly.
Oh, and you have a no fly. See, did that happen to you?
So in London, it happened twice. And then on tour, it happened three times.
Oh my gosh.
I've had it quite a lot. Yeah. And it was utter death. It's just horrible. It's horrible. Because the worst thing is when you have to show stop. If it's continuous, you're like, okay, like we're in the moment, it's fine. It's when you it's when you run to the back and then they have to show stop and then it just goes dead. And then you have to like just come back on stage 10 minutes later and go, I hope you're happy now that you're choosing this. And you're like, oh, this is so eggy. Like, oh. And then, do you know what? And going back to the riffing, they are the moments where, and do you know what? I've even heard the MDs, like, that's when they're sort of like, do you know what? I get it. Because you feel like you have to make up for this moment.
This is amazing. Shoshana Bean's story where she said, when she had a no-fly show, how she literally... just step forward and used it as the opportunity to put in every freaking riff she'd wanted to put in.
Yeah, because you're like, you feel like you have to give something more, and you do. I remember on tour I did that, and I ran forward and I was literally like, like it was crazy. But yeah, no, the no flies are not fun, but it's live theatre. These are electrical, massive, enormous machines that, you know, it can't be perfect every time. And they're all set up for it as well. They have plan B for everything. They're so slick with all of that stuff. And getting trapped in the trapdoor is quite fun.
Oh, my God.
That only happened once. And it's really awkward. Like, when you're getting used, because obviously on tour, we used to just run on.
Yeah.
But coming out of the trapdoor, you have to, like, make sure you're train and your cloak and stuff isn't in it. And I there was one day I got my cloak stuck in it, and I was like, oh, what? And you just have, there's a signal, I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to give anything away, but like, there's a signal you have to give to the stage crew so they can lower it so you don't have to stop, basically. And it's so seamless the way they do it, but yeah, oh my God, it's like you go to step back and you're like, oh shit. And then, but yeah, it's but cut. But again, that's another moment coming out of that lift. Oh,
oh my gosh.
So it just, oh, it just makes it so amazing, like, and so much more powerful coming out of there. And just, yeah. And No Good Deed is definitely my favorite song. Definitely. It's just, you know, because I was very much an act two Elphaba. Like, I naturally was an act two Elphaba rather than an act one. And by that point of the show as well, like, it was just the most amazing song to perform, and like, how, you know, gritty and real, and just, you literally bare your soul on the stage. It's just, it is the best feeling in the world. And yeah, so when you get to come out of that, like, badass trapdoor at the beginning, it's like, yes,
I need your alpha back. I need to see you. It needs to happen. It's going to happen, and I cannot wait for it to happen.
It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen, people. I'm gonna get back there one day, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, whatever. I will get back there one day and do it and finish it properly.
Wicked to one side, what are the things that now get you excited? What are the things, it doesn't mean like specific jobs, but what are the kind of things like, oh, I fancy a bit of that, or I feel like we need to get you dancing again. I need to meet
Andrew.
What?
Andrew, if my agent will tell you, if he calls me with a dance call, I'm like, Stephen, Stephen, please no, please Lord no. And so whenever you get, and you have this thing now where these movement calls are now turning into like full dance classes.
You're like, sure.
And you're like, so even when you get a movement call, you're like, sure. No, it's not. It's like a full dance.
Move a dance to a salsa. Sorry. What gets you excited?
That was ever so dramatic. Like, I absolutely would dance again. Like, it's fine. I would love to do Ghost again, but I would love to. I would love to do, you know, the London production. I would love to visit Molly again, because I just think it's such a, again, vocally it sits so well in my voice, and it's just such a beautiful, like, doing such a and like an honest, real acting piece is so incredible. I love We Were, it's so, I see my choices wrong. I always think they sound so cliche for a belter, but Rock You, I would love to do Rock You. I think I'd be a bit old for which is weird saying that for Scaramouche now, but
Killer Queen. Well, yeah, that's the best one. Yeah. That's the best role. Yeah.
So I would love to give Killer Queen a. Do you know what? One actually, when, I mean, I think I've got, I think I'm too young at the moment, but Donna in Mamma Mia is a part I would love to play at some point. I just think it's, oh, what a part. Mm. So amazing. Another show, I mean, I think my body would never, ever thank me if I did it, but I'd love to see it come back, is Starlight. I just love that show. I know they've changed it so much now, but I just, because for me, going back to what we said, that was the turning point for me to go, that's what I want to do for a living. And yet Lord of the Rings is another one that's just sprung into.
I don't really know much about Lord of the Rings, but I need to listen to it.
My.
I know. Do you know who's obsessed with it? Our lovely mutual friend, Amy Goodwin, who was on tour with Wicked with you. She loves Lord of the Rings, is always talking to me about Lord of the Rings, and I need to listen to the album.
And also, can we just touch on the fact that she is also someone that played both parts?
She was legit covering both on the road, insane. And she was giving her Glinda in Zurich,
So Lord of the Rings, I feel so grateful that I was able to see that show, because it was just on another level. It was a spectacle. So I have no doubt that it will come back, as they say, I think the arena tour has been announced for like the last 7 years, but it just, the music as well, honestly I think it's one of those shows you either love it or you hate it. I loved it. I don't necessarily think there's anything appropriate for me in that. I don't have enough of a soprano to do Galadriel, but I'd like to think I could. But again, like, I think, you know, it's quite nice now, because there's no show that I'm like, any show now would be just, you know, the shows that I've, like, you know, I would love to revisit Fiona. I would love to do that again. You know, I'd love to take over the part as that. I'd love to do Ghost, you know. But I love some of the traditional ones as well. You know, it's like, I love Oliver. Like, I'd love to, I think Nancy is a role that I'd be great at. But a more current one, because I think Mean Girls is coming over, isn't it? Mm-hmm. At some point.
Yeah, they've kind of confirmed it's happening. Yeah.
I am such a Janice. It is. Yeah, it's Janet.
Rather be me.
That is, because that's me. Because I'm a tomboy. I'm, you know, it is. So when I listened to that show, I was like, and obviously we all know the film. I was like, that is a part I just think I'd be awesome at, you know, and that's like a big belty part. And, you know, I love actually a fellow Elphaba, Mary-Kate Morrissey, who played it.
Yes.
I just think she's insane.
Love her. Yeah, I love
she's
her.
Awesome. And so that is a part, like when that comes over, I would love to, I'd love to do something Disney, because I think my voice is so suited to that kind of stuff, because it's that kind of like clear sort of Disney sort of tone. So anything Disney and other things like going outside of theatre, like I would love to do a dear friend of mine, Jenna Lee James. She does like every single enormous touring like arena show there is. And I remember going to watch her with my family to go see Hugh Jackman. And she was in that and she sung like I Dreamed a Dream. And I would love to do something like that. You know, I would, one of my biggest, another one of my dreams is that my dad used to be in the Royal Marines band. And I've always, every time we watch Remembrance Day, and at the Albert Hall and everything, I'm always like, do you know what? I think Louise Dearman did the one Just Gone. I always go, that for me would be like, my dad would literally die. He would die. If I was up there singing with the Royal Marines band orchestra and singing in the Royal Albert Hall, I would love to do like sort of more concert.
Yeah, that's a really natural kind of next kind of step now.
Yeah,
I guess.
I would love to sort of do, and it's really funny because I actually really struggle with, put me as a character, absolutely fine. When I have to be myself, that's when I'm like, ah. So when I did that concert for Thespey, I was really like, I was so nervous anyway, because it was like the first thing back and, you know, whatever. So it wasn't like the greatest of vocals. It wasn't, you know, but it was to be expected. But whenever I have to like be myself, that's when I get really nervous and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do with my arms. I don't know what, and it's ridiculous as a professional that you're saying that. But yeah, like I would love to do that kind of thing and, you know, go on to, like, you know, when they do these like Disney arena tours and I'm like, I would be so perfect for that. Mm. I would love just sing Disney songs like for 2 hours. That would be amazing. Mm. But also I'd love to try a bit of TV as well. I mean, who wouldn't? I would love to, you know, something like Game of Thrones would just be like my absolute dream. Get me in, like, we used to have this group on tour we used to get together every time it was Game of Thrones night. And it was amazing. And we all, like, picked character, like, everyone got assigned a character.
Oh my God, this is hardcore.
so funny. And it was just, I would love to do like a medieval drama or film or, yeah. So, I mean, the world is my oyster.
You're open-minded.
Basically, like, anyone wants to give me a job, I'll do it. that's where we're all at the moment.
We know it? Where she's at,
oh
yeah.
Oh, God, Jesus. I think that's quite a nice place to be. It's kind of just whatever comes my way.
Yeah.
I will, yeah, absolutely. But I miss theatre. I want to be back on a stage.
Me too.
For sure.
Well, I want to be back in an audience. Thank
you. Yes, you do.
So much.
Andrew.
For doing this.
No.
You win the award for longest recording session I've ever done. Almost 2 hours.
It was always going to happen because if you've ever watched interviews with me, Nikki Bentley loves a chat.
I love a chat as well.
Talk forever. You know, there you go.
Normally if I get to an hour, I'm like, oh, Andrew, you need to try and maybe keep things a bit more concise. But I was like, no, this is, you know, honestly, you've been so honest and open, like I say, passionate. And I think there's a lot of things that people will take away from hearing of all your different experiences and all your journey right from being on the Isle of Wight.
Do you know what I mean? East Cows on the Isle of Wight. There you go. No, and honestly, thank you so much for having me. It, like I said, coming back from what happened, you know, it's so lovely to do things like this and just, you know, get myself back out there. And it's just, so I feel so grateful to be asked to do it, and I've had the best time, so please have me back.
Of course. You're coming on the West End Frame Show. Week to week stuff. You can just be my co-host and we'll chat away.
Oh my God,
we'll do it.
Yes.
We'll do it.
Living, yes.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
You are so welcome. So much love to you. Yay. Mwah.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Once again, the biggest thank you to Nikki. I'm so excited to get stage with her again soon. But I mean, she literally needs her own podcast because she could just talk her talk. She's incredible. It's so important, I think, that we continue the discussion about mental health in our industry, in the theatre industry. Our friends at Industry Minds do incredible work. And I wanted to share what Nikki wrote in her Instagram post, the one we discussed. She said, "You should never feel ashamed or embarrassed to admit your struggle. I promise you, once you open up and talk to someone, the light to recovery starts to shine." Really powerful. And we've included some links in the episode description if you are seeking support. I can't wait to see Nikki back on stage, blowing audiences away with that ridiculous pure power belt very soon. You can follow Nikki on Instagram at Nikki Bentley. You need to go check out her videos. And if you enjoyed this episode of In the Frame, please hit that subscribe button and leave a little Apple Podcast rating and review. You can also find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. I'm very excited to reveal that our other podcast, The West End Frame Show, is back next Tuesday for a brand new series. I can't wait to get back to it. So, therefore, In the Frame will be moving back to its usual slot on Fridays, kicking off this Friday when I'll be joined by Lauren Byrne, who was playing Jane Seymour in Six and is about to take to the stage in The Secret Society of Leading Ladies.